So our next case for argument is Central States versus Lewis. Mr. Landis.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Brian Thompson. I'm actually going to be giving the oral argument this morning. I'm one of the attorneys for the appellants.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
My name is Brian Thompson, Your Honor.
You're not Landis.
I'm not Mr. Landis. I am with Mr. Landis's office. We did notify the clerk of the court that I would be giving the oral argument. So we represent the appellants, David T. Lashgarry and Beverly Lewis. And we're here today to ask that the court vacate the order of contempt that was entered on May 3rd, 2013, because the appellants lacked the ability to comply with the trial court's injunction. On June 8, 2011, non-party.
How do we know that?
Pardon me?
How do we know that?
Well, you have the uncontradicted...
No evidence.
You have the uncontradicted
Look,
affidavit.
Look, can someone not pay a judgment by just saying, under oath, I don't have any money? Okay. Yeah, you wouldn't have many judgments paid in this country if you allowed that. You have to have more.
Well, with a judgment, it allows then the creditor to discover that information.
Look, you have to have, if you are asserting that there is that you have no assets to satisfy a judgment, you can't just say, no assets, I can't pay. Well, you have to establish that you really can't pay. And there's no evidence presented that you can't pay.
Well, it's not necessarily that our clients can't pay. It's that our
clients won't pay, doesn't want to pay. That I believe. Yes, absolutely.
It's that our clients do not have the actual funds from the settlement. And I believe that our client's affidavit, which once again was uncontradicted.
It doesn't look. The point is you have to have evidence. Now, what is the evidence? You cite, just a denial. Just cite a denial plus a deposit and credit and withdrawals and so on. But as far as we know, the withdrawals were to the clients. They're taking the money that would otherwise be available for to satisfy the judgment and put in their own pockets.
Well,
what is the evidence that contradicts that?
Well, it's our client's affidavit, Your Honors. That
just a statement.
That they didn't.
That's not enough. Because it's too easy, right? It's too easy.
Well. Once again, this was a hearing on a motion for rule to show cause. So the plaintiffs, the appellee, would have had the opportunity to provide evidence that our clients actually maintain these funds.
But you're in there to show cause why you shouldn't be able to.
Yes, our client was there to show cause, but how else are they going to show that they don't have a specific settlement fund? In other words, they received a settlement.
The only then is they could be held in contempt again. I mean, that's the response to Judge Posner's question. If they file a false affidavit, hold them in contempt again?
Well, they did not file a false affidavit. They're
theoretically.
Theoretically, they can be held in contempt if they file a false
affidavit. So we're going around in circles.
Well, my whole point is that our clients did not have these
they got
settlement
a big,
funds.
They got a big settlement, right?
They did.
Where is that money?
That money was dispersed. Well. First of all, Mr. Lashgarry didn't get any part of the settlement. It was his law firm and the appellee, Ms. Lewis. So Lashgarry and Associates, who's not a party to this particular cause of action, received the money, the settlement, dispersed what was supposed to be dispersed to Mrs. Lewis, and then retained a portion for their attorney's fees.
What is the status of the case now of this issue in the district court?
The status of the case is both sides have moved for summary judgment. It's fully briefed, and we're just waiting on Judge Lefkoe's decision on that.
But now, was Lashgarry entitled to deduct the attorney's fee from the settlement money?
Lashgarry was not. Once again, he's an employee of his corporation, Lashgarry and Associates. But
someone deducted a lot of money for attorney's fees, right?
Yes, the law firm deducted their portion of the settlement.
Where's Lashgari in this? Is it his law firm?
It's Lashgari's law firm. He's an employer.
All right, so the law firm gets this money. Now, was it entitled to take that money ahead of Central States?
Yes, he's entitled to take that money ahead of Central States for the reasons that the settlement funds that the law firm got was for tortious acts committed by this Mr. Hansen post-accident. It wasn't anything related to any medical bills that were paid by the appellee. Also, he kept the settlement funds because he didn't think that the appellee was entitled to any money because Mrs. Lewis had pre-existing medical conditions that Mr. Lashgari believed that the appellee was paying for. So according to the Georgia rules, if he has a defense to anybody, any third party claiming an interest in fees, he can still take his own fees and disperse those fees. And he believed that he did have a defense to the lien that was being asserted by the appellee.
Has any sanction yet been imposed by the district court?
Pardon me?
Has any sanction yet been imposed?
No, there has been no monetary sanction.
So where did... Okay, some of the settlement went to lawyers. Now, where did the rest of it go?
The rest of it went to Mrs. Lewis.
But shouldn't it have... What about... Where do Central States...
Well, once again, it was Mr. Lashgari's opinion that Central States wasn't entitled to any of the money for the reasons that I just stated, one being that the settlement was not as a result of any injury that Mrs. Lewis suffered in the accident in the underlying case that brought about the settlement, that the settlement was for tortious acts committed by Mr. Hansen, who was the defendant in that underlying case, and also...
But you say in your brief... All you say, your summary of the argument, appellants lack the inability, you don't mean that, to lack the ability to restore the settlement fund because the settlement funds no longer existed. No funds from the settlement were in the possession of the appellants. What do you mean by that?
Well,
what happened to that money?
What we mean by that is that when the money was dispersed to Mrs. Lewis, she then spent the money on her medical expenses, household expenses, living expenses, and the amount that was dispersed to the law firm was used
but
for
normal.
But
wasn't Central States entitled to that money?
No, it's our opinion, and once again, it's the same thing that we're arguing in the lower court as
but
well,
you don't
too,
say
is that they're
you
not entitled
talk, look,
to anything.
Your brief, which is your argument portion of your brief, is less than a page long, and all you say is couldn't pay. You don't say anything about right to retain the money.
Well,
as far as one can glean from your brief, they owe all this money to Central States, and they decide to spend it on themselves. Now, where in your brief do you contradict that and show that they had a right to take this money ahead of Central States?
I don't know that we specifically addressed that in
our
brief.
You didn't say a thing about it.
Because in our brief, what we were addressing is the
issue
of contempt. You've
waived all that. All you have said in your brief is didn't have the money.
And once again, the issue that we were
addressing. Which is consistent with you having squandered it, both on Beverly Lewis and on the lawyers, neither of whom, as far as we know, from your brief, have any right to take that money ahead of Central States.
Well. Once again, I stated the reasons why Mr. Lashgari dispersed the money to his law firm and also dispersed it to Mr.
No, because it's not in your brief. It's waived. Why isn't it in your brief? How can you just say didn't have the money?
Well, once again, with our...
Because they didn't have the money because they've spent it illegally, improperly, because they owed it to Central States... then the fact that they don't have it is no defense to contempt proceeding.
Well, I think we do state in the facts section of our brief that...
The facts section doesn't do it. The only ground for your appeal in your brief is can't pay. There's nothing about don't have to pay because Central States comes second after my medical expenditures and my lawyer's fees.
Well, don't have to pay. We didn't think was the issue on appeal. It was whether our clients could pay.
But look, if you're just going to argue can't pay, you have to do more than this affidavit plus the little financial statement just says the money was withdrawn. That's not evident. That's not enough.
How much money couldn't you pay?
They couldn't restore the fund. In other words, there was a $180,000, I believe, settlement. And our,
I suppose I would like to know where that went.
And they did state that in their affidavits.
Where?
That in Ms. Lewis had spent the money on, she bought a car, she bought a house.
Right. Well, so I mean, it's so ridiculous, though, right? You get, there's a judgment against you, or you know, you owe a lot of money to Central States. So you decide, well, I don't want to give the money to Central States. I'll spend it on myself. And then when Central States gets a judgment, I'll say, look, very sorry, spend it all.
Well, once again, this
That's ridiculous.
The underlying cause of action is at equity and not at law. So
who cares? I don't know. What does that have to do with anything?
Well, I think the distinction
is... You can't stiff at the judgment creditor by just saying, I spent it all on myself.
Well, I think the distinction between a case at equity and at law is that with one at law, the underlying court could actually order us to pay a judgment. In other words, reach into our pockets and give the money to the appellee. Whereas this is an action that's bought in equity, so all the underlying court could do is impose a constructive
trust.
But it has
to be supported. Your equity argument has to be supported by something. What are the equities?
You didn't say anything about equity in your brief.
Well, once again, we believe that our client's affidavits stating that they do not have any of the settlement funds in their possession at the time that the lower court instituted the injunction.
That's no defense to contempt.
Well, we believe that it is.
You owe money, and you decide not to pay it, and you just pay it to yourself. There's a judgment.
There hasn't been a determination as to whether we owed money. It was just a preliminary injunction that was entered. And once again, that's not a judgment on the merits. It can't ultimately determine the facts. There's been no determination as to whether we owe the money or not. There was just an injunction by the lower court for us to restore the fund. Pardon me?
There was a contempt proceeding.
There was a contempt proceeding because my clients did not restore the fund. And my client's position in regards to that is that they could not restore the settlement fund because they did not any longer have any of the settlement funds in their possession. And that's the basis of our argument and our appeal.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr.
Thank
well,
you.
You're not Mr. Lennis, but thank you anyway.
You substituted for it, too.
Right. Oh, thank you.
Ms. McMahon.
May it please the Court, I am Rebecca McMahon, and I am representing the Central States in this matter. As Your Honors have pointed out, the burden of proof for proving a possibility rests solely with the defendants, and they were required to set forth an adequate factual basis to support it. As you've noted, they have not done so. I just like to point out that they had ample time to do so. The motion for rule to show cause was filed in July of 2012, and the defendants were not found in contempt until the end of April 2013. So if there was an impossibility and there were documents to support that, there was ample time for them to provide that to the court. But ultimately, the district court said that Lewis had not submitted a single piece of documentary evidence to support the fact that she had received or spent any of her settlement funds. The district court also stated that Lash Gary had not produced any documentary evidence that he had spent or dispersed the settlement funds either. Just to note something that counsel for defendants had said in that Central States was not entitled to receive the funds prior to them being dispersed to the client and to the attorney as an attorney's fee. Respectfully disagree with that. The appellants had received notices of lien prior to their settlement in the underlying personal injury case, setting forth the amount that Central States was stating that was owed to them in the event of a settlement. So they knew about this prior to settlement, and both the appellants knew about it at the time that that the settlement funds were dispersed. So there was an equitable lien by agreement, is what the district court found in the preliminary injunction order, at the time that the funds were received, and they disregarded it. Based on the appellant's disregard for the district court's orders, we feel that the contempt order was warranted, and there is no evidence that the district court abused their discretion in entering the contempt order against the appellants.
This order entered by Judge Lefkoe on the 3rd of May of last year, which she required the defendants to produce various financial documents. What was the purpose of that order?
I believe that the purpose of that order was to determine what happened to the funds. You can see from that order she wanted bank statements from various accounts from May 2011 through May 2013. I think that those would have shown that they would have shown the money coming into the accounts from the settlement and would have shown disbursements out after the settlement and after her order, the preliminary injunction order of May 15th, 2012.
She asked for this after entering the order.
She did ask for it after, but as I said, in the intervening time between the show cause here, the motion for rule to show cause and the show cause hearing, these documents could have been produced. She recognized at the show cause hearing that the impossibility defense was being raised, and she ultimately rejected it because the evidence was not there to support it.
Has this material been produced for the district court?
It has not been fully complied with yet.
Is there any discussion of bond?
There was a discussion of the bond. The district court did order Central States to post a bond. Subsequent to that order, the Central States filed a motion to be excused from doing so based on the assets that they currently
have. They didn't have the money.
No, the reason for asking for the bond waiver was that Central States had significant money that should the entry of the order have been wrong, there would have been money to compensate the defendants for doing so. The district court did waive the bond requirement for Central States.
There was a request for attorney's fees in this.
Yes, that's correct. Our basis for asking for attorney's fees in this case is that we believe this was a frivolous appeal. The appellants have argued that they're entitled to a defense that they have not proven. Appellees have incurred significant fees in defending and responding to the brief.
But if we award attorney's fees, those would fall theoretically on Ms. Lewis?
Perhaps, but I believe that Lash Gary would also be responsible for them as well.
That what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
That appellate Lash Gary would also be responsible, considering he is a defendant in this case as well. He was found in contempt as well.
But the rule says that award to the appellee doesn't give options otherwise.
Right. Unless Your Honor said.
Okay, well, thanks, Ms. McLean.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Landis, do you have anything further?
Judge, as I exceeded my time.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both of you, and we'll go to our last case.